you're gonna play. You fight with your family over which is better, Marvel or DC. The geek of all of your friends, 'cause you know what, Batman beats Superman. This is the right place to be, so turn up the volume, 'cause you're an alter geek. Alter geek. Get altered, get geeky. Alter geek. From Star Wars to Star Trek, comics to tech. Alter geek. Get altered, get geeky. Alter geek. Pull up a chair, 'cause you're an alter geek.
Hello and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and joining me this week is Mike the Birdman Dodd.
That's right, your one and only geek from Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I'm joining Steve this week as we decide to do things a little bit different here on Altered Geek this week. We're going to do things with bringing you the news that is, that was, and forever shall be from the world of geek, nerd, and dweeb. But we're also going to do something a little bit more fun this week, a little bit more interactive, if you will.
Oh, yes. Yes, this will be a lot of fun, actually. So in the meantime, I think we should get to the Power Rangers news, which is awesome. And I was vaguely aware of it, but I wasn't like fully knowledgeable.
Yes, as of this recording, we're recording this on Tuesday, August 28th. This is National Power Rangers Day. It has been declared, and today celebrates the 25th anniversary of when the show first premiered on Fox Kids Television, where it was shown in over 100 markets, reaching over 5 million kids during its premiere. And Nickelodeon, who now has the exclusive rights to Power Rangers, I think through 2021, I want to say, if not beyond that, showed the anniversary episode called Dimensions in Danger, which was basically the huge crossover. Now, every couple years, they'll do a crossover episode. Basically, every series typically crosses over with one another, if they can. And this year was they brought back Wes from Time Force, Tommy, Oliver, who is everyone's favorite Power Ranger, Gia from Super Megaforce and Megaforce, Coda from Dino Charge, Steve Cardenas, who was the second Red Ranger from Mighty Morphin. They brought
Did they have him as the Mighty Morphin, or did they have him as Turbo or Zeo?
They had him as Mighty Morphin. Actually, they actually did have Zeo in this, which really surprised me. They had Tommy as this new Morpher. So, by the way, guys, spoilers. If you haven't seen the episode, too late now, fuckers. Tommy turns into the Black Dino Charge Ranger, turns into Red Zeo, turns into White Mighty Morphin, Green Mighty Morphin, and yeah, he does all those, but he doesn't turn into Red Turbo, but there is the Pink Turbo Ranger, so Cat's there.
Nice.
I'm trying to think who else is there. I know I'm missing people. Oh, there's Gemma from Power Rangers RPM. She was the Silver RPM Ranger. I know I'm missing others. I know. Oh, there's TJ from Power Rangers in Space. And yeah, basically the plot of the episode is a guy called Lord Draven, so not Lord Draken, which is from the Power Rangers comics, but I'll talk about that in just a minute or two, wants to shatter the dimensions and have an army of evil rangers at his and Madam Odious's command. And Wes, the Red Time Force Ranger, comes across space and time with Gemma and Coda to basically stop him. And what you get is more or less way better than the legendary battle from Super Megaforce. Not as cool as Once a Ranger, and just a little bit less cool than Forever Red, because Forever Red had Serpentera get taken down like a bitch. you got to get a guy on a surfboard. Come on. But overall, it was really cool. It ran the full 30 minutes on Nickelodeon. I have a feeling there'll be an extended cut, probably on Netflix in a few months. So yeah, it was actually pretty cool. And if you've been following Power Rangers over this last year, Boom Studios has been doing this awesome comic book series started in issue 25, ran through Go-Go Power Rangers number 8, and I think ran through issue 12, which just came out this last month. Finally ends in Shattered Grid number 1. Shattered Grid finale number 1 comes out tomorrow, so new comic book day. It's not out yet. And we see what happens when Lord Draken goes across all the dimensions, literally beating the crap out of other Power Rangers, stealing their powers, and he's become this almighty Power Ranger god. It's so badass, Steve. Like, I haven't been excited about comics in years. The last time I bought comics legitimately was when I was reading the My Little Pony series about 3 years back, and then I stopped. And I heard about Shattered Grid, which is basically evil Tommy Oliver kills real Tommy Oliver in our dimension, and mm-hmm. there's no way to bring him back.
Because that
sucks. He shatters the grid, and Jen, the pink Time Force Ranger, comes back in time and is like, I can't go back any further. What's happened is now history, so I can't fix it. And they're like, no way. I'm like, yeah, this is kind of permanent. So he's going across time, kicking the crap out of Rangers, stealing all their powers. He's evolving. And currently they're fighting on the moon. Like, when we last left our Rangers, every Ranger that had survived, so certain Rangers from like other teams, you might see parts of SPD or RPM, Dino Charge, Mystic Force, Dino Thunder, whatever, come together with the now canon Hyper Force Rangers, who was the show put on by Geek and Sundry. I think mm-hmm. it was Geek and Sundry. Yep. Hyper Force, and now they're canon. They're officially canon. They team up and they charge Lord Draken's moon base. And now there's a new Megazord made up of the Jungle Fury Megazord, the Zeo Megazord, one of the Ninja Steel ones, I think, and something else. And they're like, what the hell do we call this thing? They're like, well, why don't we survive first and then we'll worry about naming it? It's pretty cool. Like I said, I haven't been excited about a property like this in forever. Like, I started collecting the Legacy toys last year, or just the end of the year before last. I had to sell some of my toys to buy my wheelchair last year. My wife, God bless her, found a killer deal, got most of my collection back. My friend Jen, who's an artist who does some things for Terrible Warriors. If you want to look her up, I think on DeviantArt or Etsy, I think she goes by Jelly Swirl Studios or Jelly Soup. I think it's Jelly Soup. You should look her up. She's pretty legit.
I'm actually familiar with her a little bit just because she
interacts with the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she got me some of my stuff back. She got me all the Mighty Morphin light figures. Actually, weird little bit. A friend of the show, a friend of Twig, a guy named Cleva, I met him at PAX East a couple years ago, is actually coming up to visit me here in my hometown of Guelph now. So I haven't seen this kid in like almost 7 years. He's coming up to Guelph to talk Power Rangers tomorrow. So my life is nothing but Power Rangers right now, and I'm kind of excited about this. So, yeah, I mean, there's going to be some cool things coming up for the property in the next year. Beast Morphers is the new show that's being adapted by Hasbro and Saban Brands for next year. And it's basically like it was based upon another Sentai show that was very spy focused, like James Bond, but with Power Ranger stuff. This one, it kind of reminds you of Power Rangers RPM, where there's computer virus that becomes sentient and starts kicking the crap out of things. So it looks cool. They showed off the first full trailer at Power Morphicon, which was about a week ago, which is the Power Rangers convention, which happens every 2 to 3 years. And they had so many full casts at Power Morphicon. Another neat thing that was announced is there's a new line of toys coming out since Bandai has lost or sold the license rather to Hasbro. They're going to have a new line of figures called the Lightning Collection, which is an anthology collection of figures. So very similar to Bandai's Legacy line, where they were 6-inch and they'd be different waves of figures. You might get Mighty Morphin, Zeo, or In Space or whatever. this time they're going to do an anthology. So you might get Mighty Morphin, Mystic Force, and Turbo or something. So I don't know. That's pure speculation on my behalf. But they showed off the White Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got swappable heads, accessories, sound effects. It looks really sweet. And they're going to be able to keep the price point of about $20 US.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to collect my Mighty Morphin. I didn't watch Zio when it was on TV.
I did.
I would get Turbo because I did like the movie, which is a guilty pleasure of mine.
It's Power Rangers, man, and it's got Tommy in it. And
if they did RPM, I would buy them in a heartbeat. RPM or SPD. SPD, I'm just finishing now. I've been watching that show for like a year. I have 5 episodes left. And every time I go to watch it, I'm thinking, I don't want to finish this. I don't want it to end. And it's one of the best Power Rangers series I've ever seen. I love that cast. RPM's probably my favorite, though, because it was basically Power Rangers meets the Terminator. It was dark. People died. The one girl essentially dooms the world because she wanted out. And it's crazy. If you get the time, watch Power Rangers RPM. You will not be sorry. So anyway, now that I've ranted about that for about 10 minutes or so, go watch some Power Rangers. I'm sure you will not be sorry. Like I said, if you're going to watch anything and start fresh, start with RPM. SPD is pretty cool. Dino Thunder has Tommy in it. It's the return of Tommy.
And, I've actually watched a lot of these and gone back.
Yeah.
Just because, just previously, I've watched them sporadically just based on who's in them.
Mm-hmm.
So like I've watched, you know, like some of the stuff around, like I didn't watch the series that had Forever Red. I just watched the specific episode.
Yep. Same here. I think it wasn't Lost Galaxy. I want to say, was it Time Force?
No, that one was
Dino Thunder. No,
no, Dino Thunder was
later.
That one was the one with Tommy as the Black Ranger.
Yes.
Which I did watch all of that. I did watch Time Force, In Space, Turbo. I pretty much watched it all the way through Zio, and then I stopped watching. And then I started watching again. Periodically, I'd watch like Turbo, In Space. I watched some Time Force, Dino Thunder. RPM, I never really got into. Samurai, I really didn't get into. Megaforce, I watched.
Oh, Megaforce was terrible.
Megaforce was terrible. On a multitude of levels, trying to copy what Mighty Morphin was.
Mm-hmm.
But I did enjoy, even though it was a crap cameo at the end.
Yeah, the legendary battle. It was a cool idea, just poorly executed.
Mm-hmm.
Which was kind of crappy. I mean, honestly, I'm going to tell you, go back and give RPM a shot. I think you'll be really and genuinely surprised by it. Especially if you stick with it past the first 12 episodes. It gets a little there. One of the things I liked about RPM is it doesn't feel like there's many filler episodes. It feels like everything is pushing the plot forward in some capacity. I haven't seen Samurai too much. I like the theme song and I like the character designs. I just don't like the characters. Although that being said, one of the girls from it, In the Power Rangers Shattered Grid comics, Jaden leaves, I can't remember her name, leaves Lauren as the new Red Ranger, which is kind of cool. That's the second female Ranger outside of SPD's A Squad, where there was a female Red Ranger. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, I'm surprised how well the show has endured over 25 years, considering how goofy the concept is.
Yeah, and how many times that they keep getting the older Rangers to return?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure if you promise Jason David Frank, hey, we'll give you $25 and access to the catering truck, I'm pretty sure he'll show up.
Oh, yeah.
The person that surprised me the most to see in this was Steve Cardenas as Rocky. That's
really?
And he had speaking lines. So I was like, that's awesome.
Well, I'm surprised they had Cat back in it.
Yeah, especially as Pink Turbo.
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't surprise me that they had I'm trying to remember the Rangers, like the Blue Space Ranger TJ. Like, it doesn't surprise me he was there, because like he's kind of been in a lot of the stuff.
And he's aged remarkably. Almost everybody on that cast has aged remarkably gracefully.
Mm-hmm.
And
Time Force Red, he comes back quite often too.
Yeah, Wes. Yeah, he comes back. At Power Morphicon, they had Jen back, and she's aged remarkably great. I would have liked to have seen her come back, but I guess they only had so many female spots, so they gave that to Gia and the Cat. So I'm pretty happy with that, all things considered.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely down with that. And then they had one Mega Force Ranger come back.
Gia, which it's weird. She's involved in something. I think it comes out next month. It's Tommy. So Jason David Frank, Gia, and I think it's just those two. And the guy who played Ryu in the Bat in the Sun Street Fighter movies. It's for Power Rangers Legacy Wars, and Ryu gets a power coin and becomes the Ryu Ranger. So wow. He gets, yeah, it go on YouTube, type in Power Rangers Street Fighter. You'll see the Bat in the Sun movies, but if you see the one from this past summer from Comic-Con, it's Power Rangers Legacy Wars, G Fuel, and some other company sponsored this little short. And it looks kind of awesome, actually. Like, you get to see, like, the Ranger Sentries from Lord Draken's world, but you also get to see the Black Dino Thunder Ranger, the Pink Zeo Ranger, I think, shows up. And they're just fighting M. Bison and other bad guys from Street Fighter. It looks really cool. If goofy as hell, but really cool looking. Plus, the Dragonzord is trash, and the Megazord's, like, all... shit. I'm surprised that how many properties work with Power Rangers, because now that Hasbro has it, like we talked about this months ago when the merger went through, just imagine the possibilities of Power Rangers Transformers. Like, my god. Yeah. Wait till next year San Diego Comic-Con, if there isn't a Dinobot themed Power Rangers recolor, I will eat my hat. It would surprise me if they didn't take advantage of that synergy, because they already have all the molds for all the friggin' Dinobots.
Yeah.
Just recolor the power of the Primes or the Combiners stuff or the Transformers Generation stuff and re-release it. We'll buy it. We're stupid. Anyway, yeah. I'm hype.
I'm Mike, and this is... the news.
Yeah, like basically, seriously, I just want to fanboy out over this forever. Like, I'm literally, as of this recording, I'm debating whether I want to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning or set my alarm to 12 p.m. or 12 a.m. Pacific time, because I'm going to presume that's when the comic app will switch over to tomorrow and the new comic will be available. I can't remember ever a midnight release for a comic. And I want to say there are midnight releases for this.
See, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, I know. Like, it doesn't happen often, but it does happen every now and again for certain major events. And I want to say Power Rangers Shattered Grid is one of those things where if the store gets enough demand, they would do it. But I know Boom Studios has been really active on Twitter showing off this really cool hollow foil variant. The variants for these comics have been really awesome, like all the different covers. There's been some fantastic artwork coming out of them. I wish I could name the artist. I don't know them. But the writer, Kyle D. Higgins, started the run on Power Rangers all the way back in issue zero, I want to say. And that was like 2 years ago.
Well, and he also wrote a lot of stuff for DC before this.
I really want to check out the stuff that he's written, because if this is the quality I can expect, wow, I know any property he gets will be in good hands.
See, Blanchard was following his Nightwing, and because he enjoys the character of Nightwing. And so when Kyle Higgins did that and then came over to Power Rangers, he was all for it.
I would like to see Kyle Higgins take on Ninja Turtles. I think that'd be fun. Or Ghostbusters. Basically, any of the big properties, I'd like to see what he could do with. Although he did say on Twitter he'd love to take on Spider-Man.
That'd be interesting.
Higgins around Spider-Man could actually be really cool. And I actually tweeted at like Higgins and a bunch of other people. I'm like, dude, for the love of all that is holy, can you please make a tabletop role-playing game out of this? Which there is a new Power Rangers board game coming out called Heroes of the Grid. And it's a cooperative 2-5 player board game where you have to defeat various monsters. There's like a Green with Evil expansion. There's a Shattered Grid expansion coming out. It comes out next March, I want to say. It looks pretty cool. They were showing it off at Power Morphicon. There's various scenarios you can build, so it's never the same game twice. I think it's like $80 to get in on it, I think, if you want just the base game. But if you pay $140, you get that and all the expansions that are coming out, plus all the stretch goals. So it's expensive. I think it's still got a fair chunk left on its Kickstarter, so don't quote me on that. But it was funded in less than 8 hours. So look for that on store shelves next year at some point. What else can I yip about Power Rangers for just a minute or other fun things?
Batman the Animated Series.
Yes, that comes out on Blu-ray on October 30th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited by how this looks because I own the DVDs.
Yep, same here.
And they don't look that crisp.
Now, here's a question. Did you buy the Blu-ray? Now, sorry, did you buy the DVDs in the smaller releases or did you buy them in the big box set?
Smaller releases.
Okay, because I got the bigger box set for them, which I got in 2007, 2008, and evidently that set is somewhat hard to find now.
Well, I actually have a story, and it kind of ties into this, and it's the whole thing that when you want something legit, you just pay the money. You don't try and go on eBay and find it. Because years ago, shortly after the network was started, Blanchard was showing me his version of the complete box set collector's edition. I bought mine on eBay for about half, because you couldn't find it anyway. And so I bought it on eBay, and then we're looking at it and comparing the boxes and everything. And I had a bootleg from China where half the words were like misspelled or like letters were missing from certain things, and animated was spelled wrong. Some of the other stuff was wrong on it. Although all the DVDs were there. So like there was a, like whatever the special, disc was that came with it, like the behind the scenes disc, for the bootleg. I think I watched it before I sent it back to eBay, and got my money back because it was a bootleg. And that wasn't the only time I've gotten a bootleg from eBay. The other time I bought Arkham Asylum and it was a bootleg. I did that. And then, so I ended up going to Walmart and buying the individual DVD boxes of each season of that and Batman Beyond.
When I bought my box set, I did it. How to phrase it without sounding like an asshole. So this was before Blockbuster closed down. And we were walking through Blockbuster at the time, me and some of my college roommates. And my friend at the time, Pierce, was this ridiculous Batman fan. And he's like, oh, man, I really should get that Batman series. I mean, it's the only one here and blah, 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 blah. And at this time, I'd just gotten paid. And I'm thinking, I kind of like Batman. That show is pretty cool. So I think I bought it out of spite. He's like, I want that. And I'm just thinking, well, if you're not going to buy it now, I might as well. And then I found out it's gone for stupid expensive.
Yep.
I'm actually just going to look it up on eBay right now because I'm kind of curious to see how much it's currently going for. I know that price will drop because the Blu-ray will have more special features and whatnot.
That's kind of another interesting topic of when you have something that is a collectible and then the company decides to come up with something that's even better than the original version that you bought.
Mm-hmm.
Thus making your originals basically garbage.
So I'm looking it up right now. We're currently, let's see, best match. I want prices highest first. The box set is currently worth $361 currently. But let's see. I'm just curious here. Let's see how much it's sold for recently. That box set has sold for, $361.
Nice.
Was the last one that was sold. Now, one sold a couple of weeks ago for $132. So the value varies. You're at least going to get, if I had to value this thing at about $150, but you could get up to, I'm going to say you could probably get a reasonable $200 for this if there weren't many listings on eBay.
Yep.
Because right now, this seems the average price is about $128 to $130, but it doesn't pop up that often. So that's kind of cool just to know that, hey, someone got a steal at $85. Man, nice. I should have sold this thing off a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and that's kind of a boat that I'm in, too. I have all this Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And because Hasbro's decided to come out with the black edition of everything, every one of these figures is worth nothing.
Yep, because the market falls right out of the bottom, and Star Wars is the worst of it. I remember years ago when I used to collect Star Wars, the big thing was the VOTC collection, which is still, as far as I know, still fairly sought after. But the black collection in the 6-inch scale has all the posability of the VOTC at a higher scale, higher price point, but it's much nicer. I have three figures in this scale. I have a Stormtrooper, a Snowtrooper, and Jango Fett. And when I look at the older figures from, say, not the Force Awakens collection, I'm trying to remember. Not Power of the Jedi, because that was like late.
Power of the Force.
Yeah, Power of the Force and Power of the Force 2. Those figures are worth nothing because those were in the 90s where they were all super buff. And then after Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, figures were, I don't know, they were okay. I think between Revenge of the Sith and just after VOTC, the Vintage Trilogy Collection, I think that was the best Star Wars had been because everything was super poseable. The 3.5-inch line looked really good. The sculpting was really nice. The vehicles looked amazing. We actually got vehicles. The Black Series in the 3.5-inch scale or smaller, I think looks stupid. But the Black Collection in the 6-inch looks amazing.
Yep.
One of the things I saw, there's black collection vehicles.
I know. I saw that because I have all of the vehicles from the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And like I've sold off the Naboo starship. I've sold Boba Fett's vehicle. I've sold
Slave One.
Yep, I've sold an X-Wing, I've got a Snowspeeder, I've got a AT-AT Walker.
Steve, if you didn't live 4 hours away, I would so get those off you.
Just
because they're gorgeous display pieces.
Mm-hmm. I don't have the Millennium Falcon, I believe my stepdad kept that. I have Darth Vader's TIE Fighter. I have all of the 12-inch line from the Phantom Menace and the original trilogy. I have a variety of other creatures. I have a ton of the card game and comics, but I'm about to offload all of it. soon. I'm putting some of it in a yard sale that's worth nothing. And the rest of it I'm taking to a flea market.
Actually, speaking of that myself, I've posted a couple pictures up on Twitter. I've posted of my Power Rangers collection. It's of a bookshelf. Now, before, that was my geek library. That was my resource archive. I'm actually taking a lot of those books I had on that shelf to a local bookstore, hopefully this week or next week, just to try and offload them, try and get a bunch of trade credit towards, I don't even know what at this point. I'm just trying to downsize right now because I realize a lot of my information, as cool as it is having it in a book, I can always just get it off the internet and the information will likely be more up to date and more accurate.
Yeah,
books are nice, but I can't hold on to as many as I used to.
Yeah, I personally like to I like to get the most up to date, best looking version of whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
I have nostalgia for the character and for the appearance during that timeline, but I don't have nostalgia for the specific figure if it wasn't show accurate.
Yeah, like for me, when, like, to talk about Power Rangers again, when the Lightning collection comes out, I will look at my Power Ranger Legacy collection from Bandai, and whatever figures are best looking will get kept. The figures that are not as good looking will get sold or traded off for something, because there's always purists out there. Like, if Star Wars collecting has taught me anything, there's a collector for everything. Especially if you keep it in really, really, really good shape. So I'm kind of hoping that the Lightning collection will be nicer and I can find things, because some of those figures, man, for Bandai Legacy are worth way more than what they should be. And I'm not a big fan of that. Like, for example, to get a Green Ranger figure, I looked this up today on Amazon. People want $150 on eBay. That's about the average price. The Power Morphicon exclusive Lord Draken figure averages about $120. And the figure's only been out for a year, maybe a year and a half, two at most. That's nutty that a figure can be that short packed or that sought after that the value jumps that much. When I collected Star Wars, I kept most of my Revenge of the Sith stuff until the VOTC stuff came out. And then I upgraded all of my clone troopers, all my stormtroopers to what the newest versions were, because they looked better. They were better poseable. They fit on vehicles better. But that's one thing I've always liked about Star Wars. The vehicles stay pretty much in scale. Although with The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, their stuff was a little less consistent. Because Poe Dameron never fit in his X-Wing as well as he should have. You really had to jam him in there to fit him in that cockpit properly. So that was kind of a pain in the butt. But just some of the collectibles that you've mentioned, you've had a beautiful collection, especially that Royal Naboo Starship. I know that goes for a good chunk of money.
I sold that on eBay, I think, for around $150.
That's not bad. I think you probably could have got more, but did you have
it? It was pushing it.
Yeah.
It killed me in shipping.
Oh, yeah.
It's such an awkward shape. And then I figured out you could take the nose off of it.
Oh.
Which helped because it's such an awkward shape. I had that problem with another thing, too, that I shipped. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was another. Insane. I'd have to look it up. It was a weird angle, which seems to be the problem with a lot of these toys. If they're vehicles, I came close to selling the AT-AT at one point, but it didn't go for whatever reason. I had a Darth Vader helmet, which was like a reproduction type thing, and it went for about $35. I mean, I've had most of the items go like well over 50 or so items, but it's still it kind of overall just the process has kind of sucked just trying to offload a lot of these items. I think, what was it I sold? Like I said, I sold the Boba Fett Slave One. I have, I hit three of the action figures storage bins that were shaped like the Millennium Falcon. Which I have two left at this point. And yeah, I don't know. I sold a number of the 12-inch figures, that were new in box, mostly the Queen Amidala, which was kind of funny that those went away. but yeah, I don't know. It's, I'm not sad to see him go really all that much, just because none of it's worth anything and I'm not going to be displaying any of it. So, I did manage to find old Captain Kirk figure I had from Playmates back in the 90s from when they had the original series characters all sold as a set in that like original series like cardboard box TOS bridge. I did find my Captain Kirk from that in this collection because this was all stuff that they saved from when I was a kid and kind of put some of my own collection in with some of their collection that were they were going to give to me when I got older. So
I've been thinking about this just because I've noticed Walmart has been reissuing certain toys. Walmart's been reissuing Transformers recently.
Yeah, they got the rights to it after Toys R Us closed.
And I've been thinking about it, but I can't justify those prices. In Canada, for example, they want $50 for a reissue Starscream. I'm pretty sure Starscream, when he came out, retailed for about $15.99. Now, I'd be willing to pay $30.99 for a reissue, but $50, you're out of your damn mind.
They were $40 at Toys R Us.
Yeah, and they want $100 in Canada for the Devastator box set. You can buy a knockoff Devastator at the dollar store for like $10.
Yep.
And it's the exact same mold. Mind you, the plastic is crap, but still, it's a functional Devastator. And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. And they want $40 for Hot Rod non-Target Master? Come on. You've got to be kidding me. And I remember when when Walmart had the Masterpiece reissues, you could get Thundercracker and Skywarp, I think, for like $100. And that's worth it for a Masterpiece figure. But for a reissue G1, you're kidding me. Because I think they also had Ultra Magnus a couple years ago and Prime. And I think they went for $50-$60 each. And that's not terrible. Those are at least worth it in my mind anyway.
See, the only ones I see, because I used to own Masterpiece Prime. I sold him. I bought him for $60 at Target. When he came out in, I think, 2005 or 2006.
Yep.
MP01, you know, they never made one that scale again because he was unfortunately taller than 90% of the Masterpiece figures. So he wasn't in scale, even with some of the later ones that came out. So that's why they kept coming out with Masterpiece Primes after that. Loved the figure, sold it on eBay, doubled my money.
I bought mine for $25 in package.
See, I bought it in package in the store, but they had an entire aisle of this figure at the time.
I can't remember how I bought. I think it was at a store that was closing.
That probably is what it was.
I think so, but I'm not 100% sure. Either that or I bought it private. I can't remember. I sold all my Transformers. I had to drive 3 hours to sell them, but I made like $700. So I paid off one of my wife's tickets or something because she got a speeding ticket or something stupid. That's where most of my toy money goes these days. If something... Only you can hear her in the background.
Only two tickets.
She says two. That's marriage, folks. I don't know. It's collecting is sort of now that I'm older and a little bit wiser and a little bit downsizing, I'm starting to learn what really matters. I mean, I was actually talking about this the other day with my friend Tristan. We were talking about this on Twig. Video games, for example, right now, the big push is to get physical because a lot of these companies are moving towards digital. So people want physical copies. I'm the opposite. I want digital so I can take it with me everywhere. I'd rather have it tied to an account in the cloud where I can just download it to my Xbox One or my PS4 or my Switch or whatever, as opposed to lugging around a crap ton of physical discs. And since I moved 2 years ago, the movers ripped me off and I'm missing all these games. This wouldn't be a problem if I had them all digital. So I don't know. It's kind of funny how our collecting habits change as the technology and as we get older, things change. Because I know we've talked about this a number of times in the show. Like, for example, if I'm going to collect comics, I'm only doing digital. You're selling off your collection. You're focusing on other things now. It's kind of weird. It's like the nerd circle of life, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of a news item, I don't know whether you talked about it last week. Did you talk about the Song of Joy that came out of Warner Brothers Television last week?
No.
Okay. The Song of Joy. The long national nightmare is over, Steve. The Big Bang Theory's ending.
I liked the show.
Shut up. It's over. Oh, my God.
It wasn't that bad.
279 episodes. It's over. Next May, I'm so happy.
The only thing I'm excited about it ending is the fact that, one, it started grating on me when they had Howard and Bernadette have two kids, and you never see them.
Yeah. I think – well, okay, here's a question I'm going to propose to you because I proposed it to Tristan on Twig. When does a show run its course? How many episodes should you be able to tell a complete story?
Until it's no longer relevant.
So you're willing to keep going as long as you've got something to say?
As long as there's something to say and as long as it's still relevant. And what I mean by that is I think the Big Bang Theory is finally hitting that stage only because they've taken all of these quote-unquote geeks from their stereotypical and very heavily stereotypical geek nature and turn them into fully functional human beings that have a geek tendency like normal people. Mm-hmm. By the end of the show, which I think kind of finally fulfills that which people were complaining about the first like five seasons. So I think that at that point it's run its course. But there's also shows like Supernatural, for instance.
12 seasons plus?
It's going on 13 this year.
That's nuts.
And to be honest, it should have ended at the end of
season 5.
That's the original end date, and that's when the original creator left the show. But the problem was is they left it on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the bookend for that that creator, and they dragged it in season 6. And 7 and part of 8 when they got a new show writer. Season 9 was getting better again, and they were tying up loose ends that were created in the first 5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout these later seasons, and honestly they should have quit at 10 or 11 because they went to basically like they went all the way up to God at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, how do you trump that?
Well, I was kind of,
to me, like it was kind of like that was another logical ending. And then they threw another like monkey wrench in it. That really wasn't a monkey wrench, but they made it into one. And then they dragged it out and opened up a whole nother can of worms with alternate dimensions because they ran out of stories to tell in the current dimension.
I was talking with Tristan about this, and I brought up Supernatural as an example of a show that still surprisingly has legs, and another show I think that had a picture perfect ending if it had ended when it was supposed to was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That show should have ended at 100 episodes when Buffy died, And the final shot was Buffy Summers. She saved the world a lot. And the world is safe from Glory and the Hell Dimension and all this other shit. And Sunnydale is saved rather than at the end of season 7 where she fights the first evil and Sunnydale is destroyed. Sure, it was unending. It was okay. But I don't think it lacked as – I don't think it had as much impact as the star of the show sacrificing herself to do the right thing. But I digress. Because when a show makes money, for example, like Supernatural, you want to keep it going. Same with Big Bang Theory. The show is infinitely profitable with merchandising and syndication rights. 12 seasons that show has. A syndication run is typically 5 seasons, 100 episodes. That's what you want to get to. Well, look at sell your rights off.
Well, look at Law and Order and all these different shows that.
Yeah.
How many seasons of that do you honestly need before it's repetitive and it's old? Don't get me wrong. I know that they take real court cases or real like crimes and incorporate them into the show. So it stays relevant. But at the same time, you can just turn on the news. Like, why do I have to watch a dramatized procedural that talks about the news the same way the news does, except it's taking it from a different angle and less garbage, and it's actually more intelligent than what the news actually portrays it most of the time. And I just would rather watch anything else other than that at that point. But like, I don't know. I think there's shows where they run their logical course in, you know, 1 to 3 years. There's certain ones that run their course in like up to 7 or 8. And then there's other shows that they can kind of go on for a little bit longer. But I honestly think that you get kind of 10 years, you're kind of long in the tooth at that point. Like you've kind of stepped over into that second decade or that second generation of television to where things have evolved and you're kind of just grappling on because you were there before.
I mean, one of the shows I think defies expectations in this regard is Doctor Who, because the show constantly reinvents itself when they have a new doctor or a new actor portraying the doctor.
Which keeps it fresh.
Yeah, which keeps it fresh. Sure, there are plot threads that wrap up from previous incarnations of the doctor. Like, for example, the Dalek and the Bad Wolf storyline continuing on even as far as Matt Smith, I think you could argue, with where they meet up with the War Doctor in there, stuff like that. So I don't know. It's kind of funny that this show has, Big Bang Theory rather, has impacted so much of geek culture, for better or for worse, depending on who you want to talk to.
I didn't say that it's done it for worse or for better, but there have been some entertaining and funny aspects to it.
Absolutely. I will totally grant you there have been some really genuinely funny moments on that show. But I think, as I've said on this show in previous years, the show could be nerd blackface at times, which I know is a very offensive term to use, but just the fact, I think it made geeks look stupider at times by, we became a joke, a meme. And I don't know, maybe I'm just too sensitive towards it because
I think we're sensitive towards it to some degree because we were there before it became mainstream.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of like, hey man, we're not all weirdos like this. Sort of thing. And you know what? I think you hit it right on the head. We were there before it, and it's not like we were there before it was cool, but it kind of rubs me that way. So please don't think I'm a geek hipster, folks.
Yeah. I'm not. Yeah. But yeah, on a lighter note, did you want to try, and I have a feeling this is going to fail miserably, but I did you want to try the pitching your own movie/TV show?
Okay, tell me how this works.
Okay, so this card game is called Buy the Rights, and it's a movie pitching party game, basically. It's basically something you do when you're, you know, looking for a laugh of absurdity or a drinking game, you know, or something to that degree. Anyways, what the aspect of is that you're a struggling screenwriter and nobody's buying the scripts you're selling, and then you know basically you're trying to pitch a movie to a producer. And so they give you four stacks of decks of different cards, like a genre, a descriptor, a hero, and a plot. And then you have to create the story around that.
Okay.
You know, obviously it'd be modified because it's a podcast, and there's two of us. So,
all right.
So I think it would be interesting to modify it in the sense that we both collaborate into whatever the card is pulled for each of them, and kind of build on that and create a, whether it's an intelligent or an absurd story using any of these things. And I have the 80s expansion too.
All right.
So I don't know what route you want to go, whether it's 80s or you want to do a mix, or you
go nuts.
Go nuts. Okay.
Let the cards decide.
Let the cards decide. So I'm going to grab a genre.
All right.
First card I pull is a parody.
Okay.
So that's our genre.
All right.
So descriptor, and some of these are like hilarious too. World famous is the descriptor. I have a feeling this is going to be terrible. Let's pull the blue card. Hero is the rookie cop.
Okay.
And the plot is getting sucked into a video game where they must beat every level in order to return home.
Okay, so basically we're looking at a parody of Wreck-It Ralph is how I'm seeing this.
A world-famous rookie cop. So it's like...
Axel Foley. No, wait, he wasn't a rookie. No, kind of, maybe?
If you consider his first film.
Okay, so Axel Foley gets sucked into a video game, and he has to save the world by going through parodies of other 80s cop movies. So he has to go through Beverly Hills Cop, Lethal Weapon, 48 Hours,
Die Hard,
A Stakeout, and I'm trying to think, what's another 80s cop movie that he'd have to go through? Tango and Cash and Turner and Hooch. Police Academy.
That would be hilarious, actually.
So there we go.
Who would his partner be?
has to be his polar opposite. John McClane. And their comic relief is Al Powell playing the exact same character from Die Hard.
Okay. And then the sound effects for the entire movie would have to be from Police Academy.
Yep, he does every sound effect.
Yep, Michael every sound Winslow. Effect. Yep. Michael Winslow. There will be not any other sound effect. It would just be Michael Winslow.
Yep, the entire time.
Which would be hilarious, actually. You'd have to do the soundtrack, too.
Yes! No, soundtrack by Jan Hammer is the guy who does the Miami Vice soundtrack. So it'll be very synthy sounding, but it'll sound awesome. Or Wang Chung.
Well, isn't Beverly Hills Cop, like, kind of synth, too?
He is. I'm trying to think. I don't know who did the sound. Harold Faltermeyer did the soundtrack for that. So you know what? That would be awesome too. So get Jan Hammer, Harold Faltermeyer, and they combine on the soundtrack with a single by Wang Chung. I put way too much thought into this.
That's part of the fun of it. And who would the villain be?
Oh, easily. Hans Gruber. So Alan Rickman. Trying to think who else, the bad guys from Beverly Hills Cop 2, who was also Grissom from CSI.
Okay.
And the henchmen are nothing but ninjas.
Ninjas.
Because every 80s movie somehow always had to have a ninja.
I know. It was really weird. Like Die Hard had a ninja. Beverly Hills Cop, I believe, had a ninja.
Yeah, there was always somebody who knew martial arts.
Yeah, it was like their token like martial superpower. Artist. Yeah, it was like, whoa, And they always had somebody like that in Police Academy too.
Yep, there was always some random badass martial artist. So okay, what else we got?
Let's see. So we have a very inventive 80s movie for one. Do you think that this would stand, like, if they were to have done this movie like today as just a fun parody movie, it had everybody still been alive? Do you think that this would have been something that could have gotten made in the way that we got the
I think so. If you could have gotten, you could have made this movie in the late 90s to the early 2000s, because you needed certain people to be alive. And this is when the parody genre was really ramping up. So this was in the era of Scary Movie, Epic Movie, Date Movie, shit like that. Yeah, I'd say there's a possibility this could have succeeded, even if it was a lower budget thing. As long as you had Eddie Murphy and John McClane, help me out. What's his
Bruce
name?
Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis. If you could have got them on board, everybody else would have just fallen in line. Plus, yeah. Wang Chung, they're like, oh my God, people remember us. So I think you could have honestly had this happen, because this would have been a killer soundtrack.
It would have been honestly like quite fun to go see too.
I can already see the movie poster, and the tagline of this movie would have been, do you have enough quarters to save the world?
What would you title the movie?
Pixelated or something like that. Or Beverly Hills Cop 4. I'm trying to think here.
8-Bit Heroes.
That's it. That's good. 8-Bit Heroes.
8-Bit Heroes.
Do you have enough quarters to save the world?
Somebody needs to create a poster for that.
This would be awesome. If you could make this in Perl or bead art so easily, or just take one of those 8-bit Photoshop filters and just put it over Eddie Murphy and John McClane and just put Donkey Kong in the background, and you would have it. Basically, it's pixels, but with Eddie Murphy and Bruce Willis. Yes, this needs to happen.
This would be hilarious. I'm going to try and work on this tonight just because it would be funny.
All right, let's do another one.
All right. Let me put those cards down. All right. Trying not to grab something that's similar. Okay. Genre, puppet.
Okay.
This is going to be really weird, I have a feeling. Descriptor, cyborg.
So, puppet cyborg, okay.
I have no idea where this is going. Con artist.
Okay, puppet cyborg, con artist, okay.
This could not have come up any funnier. Planning to rob three Las Vegas casinos simultaneously.
Okay, so I'm seeing... I can actually do this. I can do this, okay. So you set this in the reality of the video game / tabletop role-playing game Shadowrun, which has orcs, dwarves, and trolls, and elves, which would be portrayed by puppets. Cyborgs, since they have chrome in that world, so like wired reflexes, cyber eyes, and metal legs and arms and shit. And the con artist part comes in. So a cybernetic troll decides he's out of jail. He needs money. So basically you remake Ocean's 11 with Middle Earth. And there you go. It's Shadowrun 7. It's Shadowrun Ocean's 11.
The only civilized location is like your Las Vegas.
Yeah, and it's all Las Vegas. It's all practical effects. So they're all puppets. Now that I'm not saying they have to look like Muppets, but think practical special effects. So yeah, this could be, frankly, this would be friggin' awesome. If you could make a cyberpunk practical effect heist movie, I would go see this every day just to make sure it cracked number one at the box office. Hell, I want to make this movie.
That would be funny, actually. It's actually kind of funny that that puppet came up, considering we had that Melissa McCarthy movie come out.
Yeah.
The Happy Time Murders.
Which evidently it didn't do too well. It only cracked third place with $10 million, though it wasn't the worst performance. I think it's the worst performance of her wide release career, but not the worst performance of her career, which is kind of crappy because the idea is great. But here in the movie itself, it falls very short on its jokes.
Yeah, it's very lowbrow.
That sucks. I had such high hopes for that movie.
But had they done it differently, we could have ended up with this.
Yeah, exactly. We could have had a cyberpunk heist movie. That would have been awesome.
So scale on 1 to 10, how well do you think this would have done in theater?
If you put this movie out now, it would do awesome simply because people are hyped about the cyberpunk genre because people loved shit like The Matrix. Blade Runner did pretty well. People remember movies like Johnny Mnemonic and Strange Days. The Shadowrun role-playing game, it's still pretty popular in certain circles. And there was the movie Bright, which came out on Netflix about a year or two ago. And I think people liked it for the most part. It introduced the idea of urban fantasy with orcs, dwarves, and trolls existing in the world with guns, computers, and the internet. Yeah, I think this movie could actually be really successful. You just have to lay the basis of the world down first and really be nothing but practical effects. If you could have me convincingly believe that a troll carrying an assault cannon was robbing the Bellagio, I am there yesterday. Because, and I say practical effects, because as much as I love Lord of the Rings, I'm a little sick of CG. I want makeup. I want practical effects. I want puppets. I want stuff that looks good on. I want stuff that has weight to it. Stuff that looks like it has momentum. So I think stuff like that can be really successful because my big problem with the last Hobbit movies is there was a lot of CG. And CG is cool and everything, but it will never be practical.
Oh, no, no. And that's probably why, you know, like the Force Awakens was better than like the Han Solo movie.
Exactly, because you need practical. CG is cool. CG in the right places is cool. But you will never beat something you can see, feel, and touch.
Yep. I definitely am in on that boat with you. I like the fact of practical effects over a ton of CGI. I think that's part of why like the Christopher Nolan Batman films did so well too.
Exactly, because they had real guys doing the stuff. They had, it felt real. It was rooted in reality as opposed to superheroic fantasy, which is okay. And I think that works for his style of filmmaking. So let's do one more before we round out the show.
Okay. So let's see. Okay, we got period piece.
Okay.
Which could be anything.
All right.
I'm gonna take from my 80s pile. Grizzled.
Okay.
Is the descriptor. And then let's see. Special Forces team.
Ooh.
Fighting a cybernetic hitman sent from the future.
Okay. Picture this. It's the 1940s. A grizzled, hard-boiled special forces team sent behind enemy German lines has to fight an experimental German Terminator sent from an alternate future where the Germans won. So this Terminator is sent back in time to assure the success of Hitler.
So it's still Arnold.
Yeah, it's still Arnold, except he's a Nazi.
So his Austria. Yes.
It's going to be, oh my God, this could be freaking awesome. If you had World War II units fighting a Terminator, just imagine a T-800 exoskeleton punching a tank and it flying across the battlefield. Like, oh my God, this could be awesome.
Terminator 1942.
I'm stealing this idea for a role-playing game. Oh my God, this could be so cool. But yeah, okay. So the Special Forces team led by, I want to see, has to be someone iconic. I want someone who's an old movie star who could pull this off.
Sean Connery.
Yeah, Sean Connery leads a team of Scottish commandos. Or SAS commandos. So the Scots are there with them. So it's a British SAS team sent behind the enemy lines in Berlin. They're there to steal something. And then they find out the Nazis have this future tech and the Terminators come back to help them win the war. And the British SAS has to stop them before the Terminator can give them like future Hydra like weaponry, which would overwhelm the Allies.
I could see that.
And we'd call it probably like Future Shock or Dawn of Fate or something like that.
I like Future Shock.
And that, and the future, the poster would be the Terminator's exoskeleton foot on top of a Nazi war helmet. And you just see the skulls in the background and the ruined theater of war of 1942.
I can see that.
That would be, my God, can somebody out there draw this? Because that would be, oh my God. And it would be, there's no fate but what we make for ourselves. And it would be Sean Connery, Arnold Schwarzenegger, put Vin Diesel in there for fun. And I don't know, maybe I want someone plucky and funny.
Johnny Knoxville? No.
Actually, you know what? He could work because he would be willing to do his own stunts and he would be great comic relief. And you have Linda Hamilton in there as the great-great-grandmother of Sarah Connor. And she's escaping the Germans. So it's like a quick Easter egg. You blink and miss it, but it's there.
She's a nurse.
Yes, that could work. That's where she works in the work ethic. You have to fight for yourself and you got to do all this. And when the time comes down to it, you got to be ready to fight, Sarah. So yeah, there you go. There she learns from great-great-grandma Connor, who was a nurse during the Second World War, and she escaped to England and then came over to the States.
Yeah, once it sounds again, like we have our next Terminator movie.
There we go. Screw this new one. I want this one. Nazi Terminators.
That'll be Bach.
That'd be so cool. Oh my God, man.
See the possibilities with a randomized card game?
Oh yeah. Like we have three awesome movie posters here. A troll holding bags of money with like an M60 machine gun walking out of the MGM Grand, and it's like I can't think of a tagline, but it would just be called Heist, Shadowrun Heist or something like that. And then we have 8-bit heroes.
We just call the other one Puppet Work.
That's good. See, we have this figured out. We should be in Hollywood, Steve.
You would think so.
Someday, man, someday, someone will hire me to come up with really cool ideas like Nazi Terminators. And remember, folks, always punch Nazis. They could be a secret Terminator. You don't know this.
Yeah, you don't. You don't. So let us know if you liked this segment, if you liked the ideas here, or if you have suggestions for things we should use depending on what card is pulled in the next game. Yeah, just sound off, give us comments, and let us know what you liked.
Absolutely, guys. So be sure to interact with the show in a number of ways. You can reach us on Twitter, Facebook, and I think you guys have an Instagram too, right?
Yeah.
So, Steve, if they wanted to get a hold of the show, they would do so by going
to @AlterGeek.
So until next time, folks, I have been Mike the Birdman Dodd from Twig, the Flagship of Stupidity, joined with Steve Megatron Phillips. And as always, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.